all CEOs, me included, we don't actually know what we're doing.
They're all sharks, so all you got to do, though, is know shark bait.
I don't think we've ever talked about this before.
We can capture all of the wallet share.
First place you start is with the product.
That's just the first nut.
This is the Capital Stack.
Hey, everybody. This is David Paul, the host of the Capital Stack podcast, where I talk to founders, operators, and investors about all things value creation in startups. Today, I am talking to my man, Quentin, over at PadSplit, an Atlanta-based company, where he's the guy, man. He's the guy. He was brought in by some investors to work with a rapidly growing startup. He's definitely like probably like 35 years older than everyone else in the company, but he's trying to be cool because he's like wearing like the t-shirt and there's like a Pac-Man behind him. He's trying to be relatable. Quentin, how you doing, bro?
Yeah. Here's a bullseye. One for one DP.
Yeah, I fucking nailed it. Look at you. You don't even know what you're doing. Dude, you were a management consultant wearing a suit until they brought you in here.
That is absolutely right. Sweating my face off in Atlanta when I started in the 90s. Mm. That's really funny. I work with people that are born in the 2000s, and it blows my mind.
I try to slight my one of my analysts the other day. I was like, yeah, it was like, you know, 1996. I was like looking at like a Chumbawamba song. And I was like, yeah, it was like 1998, bro. You weren't even born. He was like, yeah, you're right. I was born in 2020. Yeah, 2001.
I've tried movie references. And I'm just like, you know, Eddie Murphy was a comedian actor before he was the donkey.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
No, they don't. Mm-mm. But it's good.
I had a nanny try to tell me that Taylor Swift was bigger than Michael Jackson. And I said, no way, dude.
Bank account, maybe, but that's about it, man.
Well, I mean, you have to look at it from a referenceable perspective. It's like, okay, first of all, people were like knowingly like letting like Michael Jackson diddle their kids for like fame, right? Like that takes a whole level of commitment to the cause. Not to mention, I mean, he was international. And he didn't have streaming. He didn't like own his own label. Like he didn't have like all this like leverage that people have today. But people went to records in line to wait to buy CDs. Can you imagine what people would do? Where's the Billie Jean? Right? Like what's Taylor Swift's Billie Jean or Thriller? There is none.
No, she's got a Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And like 7 billion followers. So she's winning today. You know, that's okay.
There's no Billie Jean.
Cultural relativity. That's the term of the day for me, you know. And you've got two little guys. I've got a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. And every time I talk to them, I feel like I'm talking a different language. I'm like, no cap. Did you know that means something? Mm-hmm. Riz, that's a word, right? They've bastardized our English language, and it's amazing. Riz. But it's pretty funny to watch.
So, Quentin, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and let's talk about PadSplit.
Oh, exciting. I would say that I'm an entrepreneur by heart. If I had to say, you know, what is it that you like the most? But I've found this term that I really like, is that I like to connect dots. I think that's like the simplest way I look at it, is that I love understanding like what's happening in individual ecosystems. I started, you know, as an employer historically, as an employee, I started working with a big five consulting company. It was Anderson Consulting when I started, went through the whole name change to Accenture and started my life inside of that space, got a little bit of exposure to everything. And I ended up specializing in electric deregulation. Those of you that are in Texas, they know what ERCOT is, because that was the failure of their electrical grid system. But that's what I spent the bulk of my years working on, was electric deregulation in Texas. And like most utility or most consultants, once you get into a niche, you just go from project to project to project. Mm-hmm. But that's how I kind of learned how systems and businesses worked. And I found myself in a happy little space between the technical people who were building stuff and then the business people who were using stuff, and then realized that they don't actually know how to talk to each other. And there was a space in between there. Mm-hmm. And I liked it a lot. So I ended up going from one company to another. And then my wife got pregnant. Very much understanding is that as exciting and sexy as it was to jump on an airplane every Monday and coming back Friday and live another life, doesn't really work when you're popping out babies. So mm-hmm. I had to find something else. And I found this amazing opportunity where I purchased a route, a Boar's Head deli provisions mm-hmm. route where I was slinging bologna. So my kids grew up thinking dad sold bologna for a living.
I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that you were, you know, did that shit.
So that was fun. It was like, that was the logistics experience. And then in typical fashion, it was, there's the business that I'm in. And then the fun part was kind of understanding the businesses that we served and then how we best fit into that. And then kind of navigating in between both. So constant learner, I think that's another way of describing it. And then fundamentally like operational based. When I sold my company and for a while I sat there, I'm like, what am I going to do next? And my wife, she introduced me to a headhunter and we're talking and the lady was like, you cannot describe who or what you are. I'm like, not really. It's mm-hmm. like, I'd like to do a little bit of everything. And then I have a relationship with my friend, one of my best friends. He's, as we would say, he's my ride or die. And he introduced me to PadSplit. He's an early angel seed investor in PadSplit and said, hey, we're growing. I love this company. I think it's going to do amazing things. But the faster we grow, we run into operational questions. And, you know, can you come and join and see if you can add value? And then since I got here, it's been an amazing run. It's like the first startup world that I've entered in. Everything else was really established businesses. And it's just exciting. It's fun to see something grow so fast that fits such a niche and then solving a new problem every single day. And then as you grow faster, that problem evolves into something else. And then you need to figure out a different solution for that. So that's been, it's been a really good run. So I'm coming up on 2 years here and that's kind of where I am today.
So what is PadSplit?
Cool. PadSplit is a five-year-old startup. It is a prop tech company, if we had to check a box on a checkdown list. But what it essentially does is we take single family, we're a platform like Airbnb, and we allow investors to take single family houses and add density or additional streams of revenue by renting by the room. So your single family home that people would buy and start to rent for one family, let's say for $2,000, we break that up into monetizing underutilized space, very similar to Uber. So the living room and the dining room and a den, we put walls up and make those into bedrooms. And then we're adding density or housing opportunity for affordable housing directed toward workforce housing, directed toward low-income housing in mostly metropolitan cities. So your average rent for the house goes from $2,000 renting one house to, if you're the user or member, to paying $700 to $800, up to $1,000, depending upon the amenities in the room for that individual investor. So the beauty of it is it's a two-sided marketplace. We have the member side or tenant side, and then we have the investor and the supply side, very similar to Airbnb, but that's the marketplace that we've created. And then from there, entrepreneurs have found our marketplace and they've found ways to thrive. They've found different ways to kind of create and drive businesses off of it. So it's an amazing thing to kind of watch it evolve over time as more and more entrepreneurs plug into our space station and make a business out of solving for rent by the room, or other people call it single room occupancy. And we call it pad splitting.
So, yeah, I mean, from a socioeconomic perspective, huge, huge benefit. People can't afford houses. They can't afford rent. I mean, honestly, it's a person that is, you know, a lower class individual, you know,
lower income.
Lower income. That's what I meant. Sorry.
You and I are low class. It's two different things, DJ. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Totally. White trash, lower income people, my bad, have a essentially like you rent an apartment, you got to pay first, last security. If it's an apartment you can afford, it's probably very far away from where you can work. So you've got, you know, transportation issues. If your car is shitty, then your car, like you have to take the bus and that's unreliable, right? So you have an area where you have a huge underserved population that wants to work, that needs to work, but we have this housing crisis. And like we're totally underbuilt, right? I mean, the data's there.
And that's a long tail to fix that.
Yeah, that's going to take decades. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. Somebody showed me a chart. It's like people just stopped building in 2007. Like they just forgot. Like
you can take out 2007 and reinsert 2024.
Right.
You know, you throw a 7.5% interest rate and a lot of building construction, a lot of projects come to a screeching halt, you know, to your namesake. Capital stacks get real nervous at 7.5%, you know, especially around construction. So when those things come to a screeching halt, now you're looking at the runway that it creates. You know, we're now putting on product that was started in 2020. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the numbers that we've seen. And there's so many graphs out there that people see, but they're not really deep enough to understand kind of the impact of it. Is populations keep growing, especially along the Sun Belt. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia. People are leaving Northeast metros. They're realizing that snow stinks. Slush is bad, right? People want warm. A la yourself, you went from an oven to perfect weather. You know what I mean? Like that's people are leaving for so many reasons, and they're going to essentially what we would call the Sun Belt. But the supply for housing hasn't really changed. So increase in population, stagnant in rent and income, and increase in rent. That's a bad formula for affordable housing.
That's a huge, that's a very bad formula.
And right, but yet the people that are coming down and they want great service, they want all these amenities, they want all these things, that service industry based, where are they living? Let alone the industrial commercial side where you're putting in massive facilities a la Amazon or anybody else that has a distribution center. Where are those people living?
Right.
You know, and it's a really great time for us. We have, I hate to say it, but the interest rates going up is a great tailwind for us. The supply that's already there, our investors are just finding a different way to do biggest and best. You know, because the investors that are moving quickly, it's like being in Airbnb 2015, right? It's like people don't really know about it. And the ones that do know about it, they're capitalizing really quickly. Because for us, we have almost 12,000 units. So a unit in our world is a bedroom that is a one single stream of revenue. We have 12,000 units across 20 markets in the country. And the best, my favorite statistic that I'll throw out there is that it took us almost 2.5-3 years to get to our first 1,000 units. And then I think we hit 1,100 units in the last 11 months. So our hockey stick curve is starting, which is amazing because people are finding us because we are the best stream for income producing revenue in the single family space. So more and more people that are struggling to find revenue are finding us and then utilizing our platform to start monetizing some assets that are just sitting there either flat or negative cash flow.
Do you think that from a real estate on the single family side, we're not going to see like a correction in pricing because people are just holding on to their rate? And it's just like, I feel like we're just kind of at this standstill with pricing. Yeah. Like no one's doing anything. There's no transactions happening. People are like, okay, we're just not going to move. And yeah, we can't really make any money. I mean, we can't move because we can't pencil anything.
From the retail side, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Like if I wanted to move out of my house, sell it for maximum dollars, and then try to move into something equivalent, I would have to bring more money to the table.
Right.
Right. I'd have to downsize in that move. But in reality, for the investment perspective, for single family houses, though that deal flow has come to a screeching halt because the exits that people have typically used, whether it be long-term rentals as a one-to-one rental or short-term rentals for being in an A or B neighborhood, that's turned into an arms race. Like if I'm not putting in a lazy river and a sauna and a cold plunge tub, it's really hard for me to compete for short-term rental dollars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at 8.25, 8.5 investment interest rates, that's really hard to.
Luxury Airbnb is done. Yeah. Right. Like, and they didn't think long term. They weren't getting good rates. Right. Like, they were probably just, you know, just trying to figure it out using floats, you know, hard money to get it.
Oh, yeah.
Because they could pay it.
Right. It was like readily available for those that were seeking it, is that they were penciling at the very top of their pro formas. And those people are the ones that are, you know, quote unquote, distressed by owning an $850,000 house that is 40% occupied. Right. That is not what AirDNA told them they were going to buy 2 years ago.
Right.
You know? Right. So like for our world, it's actually amazing because all of these headwinds for everybody else's exit, it's a tailwind for us because we're taking essentially $200,000 distressed property, putting in $60,000 to $80,000 worth of renovation. We can utilize single family financing for that. You know, we can get 75-80% ARV for that and then be penciling instead of $2,000 a month in rent for a three-bedroom, two-bath. Now we have a seven-bedroom bath, three-bath that is putting out $800 to $900 a room. You know, wow. So the math just works. Like if I could put tattoos on my forehead, I just want to say our math is better than yours. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the investors that get it, they're building portfolios of these things. Oh, this is a favorite one, Davey. Listen to this, right? Because like you, I can talk to anybody, but I meet real estate investors that own Airbnbs in their portfolio, and they own long term rentals in their portfolio, and then they hear about us, and they literally look at us like it's a cash flow machine that allows them to offset really intermittent cash flow upstream. So they're high end Airbnbs that are almost break even, but they have massive appreciation. They can keep those because they're leveraging pad splits as a part of their portfolio to offset that negative cash flow. It's pretty wild to see what
people
are using.
Yeah, you just ballast it, right? You just just make more margin. It's like it's not a silver bullet for everything, but you know, for people that are more risky, like you're like, hey, dude, this sleeve of income is going to hedge, right, or ice up or juice your returns on stuff that's unoccupied.
Yeah. And like the thing is, we're so early. Think about this. The folks that are, you know, hedge funds are ruining SFR inventory. Hedge funds are ruining this. Well, it may not be the big three or big four that own this, but there's so many family offices that are, you know, subsets of that, that own massive portfolios of single family rentals. And they were just buying. And they're sitting there vacant. And now we're talking about like, we got squatter problems and we have all of these assets on our books that are negative cash flowing.
That have
I'm
rental
waiting
rights,
for that,
right?
That lever to open and say, just come play with us and understand what our cash flow model looks like on your assets that are sitting on your books, dormant and vacant. That's going to be, that's kind of our next lever for opening up in terms of growing into that space, because that's going to be fun.
So what do you what is the hesitation? Is it just that it's new? Like, what are they afraid of? Just for, like, why isn't everybody just run into this right now?
A couple things. I think it's new. If we were in Europe, we would be on fire, right? The biggest constraint would be supply.
Right.
But in the US, people just aren't used to shared houses, single room occupancy. They're not used to, we think of like co-living. The closest thing that people can associate as an American is like, oh, I went to a hostel when I was backpacking through Europe,
right.
You know? And like that's kind of the introduction to it. If you grew up in Manhattan, if you grew up in San Francisco, where housing prices were so astronomically off the scale, shared bedrooms are normal. Like I have friends that lived in Manhattan with strangers that they didn't know because they needed 300 square feet.
Right.
And that's about what they can afford. And that was kind of part of the hustle of growing up in your early 20s. Living in Manhattan, but the rest of the country, it's white picket fence. It's, you know, two dogs, two cars, and one single family house. And it used to make sense for that, but
right.
It doesn't now. And because there is no apartment complex that is being built to accommodate workforce housing at 60%, you know, AMI, like that math just doesn't work. People aren't putting on supply. They'd rather take those same dollars as a developer and put on high-end $800,000 townhouses with a live work play underneath.
Right.
And then they can then leverage LIHTC dollars in order to get, tax breaks, you know, and you know, put that in their cap stack. It's fun for me to understand what that model looks like now, because now I kind of understand why we have a housing shortage the way we do. Mm-hmm. But single family construction baseline is like $400,000. That's not a starter house anymore.
No.
You know,
you would think that, I mean, knowing that the how much of a housing crisis this wouldn't be like an initiative, you know, for more left-leaning places to just like literally like, let's just subsidize this. Like, how do we get more people housing? How do we get people in California in houses, et cetera? But it just, I mean, is it, you probably get a lot of pushback from, you know, municipalities, you know, yeah, renters, right? Stuff like that. I mean, because you're kind of really going against the grain.
Most of the pushback is for people that are, they're just, they don't know what we are.
Right.
It's such a foreign concept for them. And then the default setting is, well, what's in the books? What's legal? And I laugh at that once I started, you know, researching and studying Atlanta. Fulton County is where I live. That's where the core of our units are. Their single family definition of, you know, residential one single family definition for zoning and code. It says 6 unrelated, 4 boarders. So 4 people can rent inside of that same house, and an unlimited number of domestic servants. So if I were to read that out loud and like put like, you know, real numbers to that, I can have an unlimited amount of people as long as it's 6 unrelated, 4 people are paying, and then a whole bunch of domestic servants. So you put that in quotes.
That's so Atlanta.
Want to.
Yeah.
It's so Atlanta, right? But we're evolving, baby. We're evolving.
Yeah.
But in reality, that's the biggest pushback, is that if I'm a larger hedge fund, if I'm a larger investor, I have, you know, an entire risk group that says, nope, that doesn't make any sense. You know, and we've had conversations with a lot of family offices and larger funds that have a problem with occupancy, you know, of within their current asset base and their rent rolls. They look at our model, but then some of the ways that it's written, I'll give you an example. One fund, the way it was written is that it has to be a minimum of 12 months for a lease. Mm-hmm. So in their portfolio, they have to rent it for a minimum of 12 months. And it's funny because the sales guys were like, oh, that's really risky. It doesn't make any sense. The one guy who spoke up, he's an operator. He's the one that does all the property management, all the lease up, and all the maintenance. He goes, wait a minute, time out. You're telling me $1,800 is what my normal house would rent for. But then in your model, if I put in 2 walls and made it a 6 bedroom from a 4 bedroom, I'm charging essentially $800 a room. And I'm getting top line revenue at $4,800, $5,600, depending upon the number of bedrooms. And I still get to collect my 6 to 8% off of that top line number. He's looking at it and he starts yelling at the other gentleman in the call. And he's like, don't we own the fund? Can't we just take this tranche out, put it into a different fund and remove that aspect of it?
Right.
So those conversations are starting to happen because people are having pain around revenue and occupancy, especially mm-hmm. right now.
Right.
And it's interesting to see is that some people, they're backing into our model because of revenue constraints and revenue pain. So they're like, all right, this becomes, it outweighs the uncomfortableness of what we don't know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's helping. But right now, early adopters, you know, they're thriving in our space because they're evolving out of something that's not working, a la Airbnb, a la I'm you know, trying to house traveling nurses and all these other groups that own single family assets as a revenue stream, mm-hmm. they look at us as a much more consistent model.
And so I'm a flipper, or I'm an investor. Let's say I'm an investor, mm-hmm. right? Because there's probably different personas, right? There's the flippers that like you want to get them to start doing this and like do the work. And then there's probably the investor that doesn't want to do shit, right? And then you have the renter, right? Or the member, I should say.
Yep.
So like what does the platform enable you to do?
So the platform is amazing in the sense that we're a two-sided marketplace. We handle the demand side. So our demand side is what we call the members. The members are essentially, they all go through a background check. They all apply for a membership to PadSplit. And then from that point, they get approved as a member if they pass a criminal background check, and then they get through our income verification. So every single member has those two qualifications. And then they have the ability, based upon what they're approved for financially, to go on our platform, like kind of like Airbnb or anything else, where they can see all the rooms that are available in their designated areas that they're looking for. On the flip side of that same marketplace, we have our supply side. So David Paul, the investor, he will get a individual single family house, or it could be multifamily, depending upon how they acquire it. And then they add additional walls. That's their forced appreciation into their model. And then they back it up and they post it and activate it on our platform. So our platform delivers three major pillars. One is the demand aggregation. And in the beginning, it was like, hey, we get you bookings. And one thing that I've had to kind of change the perspective on is we get you views, right? Like even on Airbnb, nobody guarantees a booking, right? Mm-hmm. We get you a million of eyeballs that look at your house, and then it's a marketplace you compete against your neighbors and the other people that are on our platform. So we aggregate the views on your properties, which lead to bookings. We handle all of the collections. So it's a digital collection platform as well, is that we handle roughly like 97.5% collection rate, which is astronomical if you think about who our demographic is. Mm-hmm. And then we have a comms and messaging app and portal for communication between the member, you as the investor or a property manager. You know, I would strongly suggest utilizing a property manager.
yeah, I would
want. You know, it's just once I say it out loud, I get that reaction all the time. But like people are like, no, I think I want to save the 6%. You do not want to deal with 95 people in your portfolio.
No,
it's a headache.
You know what? That's not someone you want to do that.
And you know, this is what like the lessons you teach your kids is like, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right.
That's essentially it, you know, and you make enough revenue in our model that it takes that into account, where you utilize a property manager to handle your portfolio. And then from there, you just focus on acquiring more assets to put on our portfolio, our platform. And that's how you succeed, is that it's a really fast way to scale your business, because the returns are typically 2.5 to 3 times returns on a normal long-term investment.
Yeah. Okay. And then—
So I met a guy one time who, you know, his counter argument to me was, oh, if I'm going to get 5.5% in a federal bond, why would I invest in you guys? You know, and I've been spending a year trying to you know, find answers for that. But it's essentially, does it breaks down to what's your risk tolerance? And then how do you want to diversify?
So what is it? So like what is the net? Like if I'm an inactive investor, I don't want to do shit, right? I just want to put money in and take money out, mailbox yeah. money. So what is the net?
You're looking at like, how do you want me to communicate it? As a cap rate, as a cash on cash return, as a
cash on cash return.
Okay, so I'll give you my example as a good one because it's realistic, right? I purchased a house. I'll just give you the quick numbers. I purchased a house from a wholesaler at $187,000. Mm-hmm. I put $65,000 into it as a the renovation cost, including furniture, mm-hmm. and then I. Took out, so I delayed financing on it. So I paid for it in cash and then I took out delayed financing. And the house appraised at like 350. So I ended up leaving, I got a loan for like 243. So I ended up leaving like somewhere in the realm ballpark of like $7,500 in the deal. Mm-hmm. So after 6 months, I was infinitely returning on the house. So it's hard to put a cash on cash return on that one, seeing the fact that it's considered an infinite return because I was able to burr out of that property. Mm-hmm. But even now, I think the standard return you're looking at is anywhere between 15 and 25 to 30% cash on cash return.
Yeah, that's the reason why you don't put it in a 5% bond.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, like—
Again, you know, like it's just one—
I mean,
you could.
I mean, it depends. I mean, what do you want to do? I mean, do you want to— I mean, if like obviously people that talk to you like are people that do deals, but like there's like this de facto. I mean, same thing with venture. It's like, well, I get 5.5%, and I'm like, I'm talking to you about 40%, right? And you know, there's like it's a portfolio allocation perspective. It's like yep. It's diversification, you know, full stop.
My argument is like, take a look at your real estate component of whatever you're investing in, and take a look at that number. My favorite term right now is a toe dip. Just toe dip one property and horse race me against whatever you have in your real estate portfolio. And mm-hmm. we will just wax that you know, yeah, from a return perspective.
We are going to wax that ass.
We're just going to wax the returns on it. You know, but it's just a simple way of kind of putting it in terms. And like you use terms like flipper. Those are my favorite guys because they're essentially taking out, they're chasing a check for every transaction. And then they're having to deal with taxes and capital gains and everything else, right? In our model, I would prefer that person hold every two, every three properties. Mm-hmm. You know, and then all of a sudden you're building.
Well, they can't flip anymore. There's no margin in flipping anymore. You can't flip.
They are. There's a lot of people just doing it at less margin because they don't know how to do anything else. Right.
They're doing it for $10,000, right? And they're just making
$10,000 or $15,000 lipstick flips are that's a thing real now, right? You know, but like, and then their way they hedge that is they just get smaller renovations. So instead of being a deep distressed property and flipping that thing for a large margin, they're just taking small rips off of smaller renovations and then taking the risk of it sitting on the market trying to sell. In our world, I'd rather you figure out, use the financing vehicles that are out there to hold on to this thing, build wealth, and then get the tax benefits on the backside. Like that is another lily pad of looking under to realize, oh my God, David, I never thought I enjoyed the tax code until I started buying investment properties. You know, like the disdain I had for people who would sit there and say, oh, you know, I don't pay any taxes. And I'm like, what a jackass.
Yeah.
Now I look at it and I'm like, damn.
There's something
God
to that.
God bless a cost segregation, you know?
Yeah. So what are you excited about right now? Like, personally, what are you excited about? What are you reading? What are you geeking out about?
I am geeking out about kind of where we're positioned. You know, like I have a son that plays ice hockey and, you know, he always talks about, his coaches have always talked, go to where you think the puck's going.
Puck sense.
Not where the puck is, right? Like, where's the ball going to?
My old partner used to call it puck sense. That's where you say.
That's totally, right? Mm-hmm. And like, if you were to look at the entire world, if you were to look at the real estate space, everybody's got headwinds, right? STRs and Airbnbs and VRBOs, a lot of headwinds around occupancy legislation and people utilizing that. And I talk about it, and that's a want market. Mm-hmm. In our space, we're a need market, right? Mm-hmm. Like everybody's talking about affordable housing. And the only suggestions they really have are these same normal ones that they've been utilizing for decades. We're just different. Right? So we're attractive. Oh God, this is the other one. I told you when we talk, like I talk in sound bites. My daughter, teenage daughter, she introduced me to this show called This Is Summer We Turn Pretty. This is the summer we turn pretty, David. Like if compared to these other exits, like we're so good in terms of cash flow. We generate more cash flow for the same asset, right? So if I could coin another little tidbit about Pat Split, we give multifamily returns on a single family acquisition, which you can't really do.
Yeah, with less risk, right? I mean,
totally,
like, honestly,
less risk, right?
So and like, less out of pocket.
If you are currently a dentist or a physician or a high net worth individual that's part of a syndicate and they came back to you and said, hey, I have a capital call, that's a terrible place to be in, right? But for that same investor, they can acquire a pad split or a series of pad splits that is equivalent to a multifamily. You want 30 doors, go get six individual single family rentals and then convert them to a pad split. And now you have a portfolio of 35 doors. And those 35 doors will yield more cash flow and more tax benefit than your single family property, at least now. You know, and then moving forward, that's not going to change a whole lot. So the things that I'm super excited about is all of these other vehicles that people can invest in. It's a lot of nervous energy and a lot of headwinds in that space. But for us, we have our own challenges and we have our own zits and warts, but essentially we're where people are going to end up. You know, people need affordable workforce housing for essential workers in the markets that they're in. We can put that supply on faster than anybody else. And because of the model that we use for single family residents, or even like multifamily up to like quadplexes, all the financing components already are in place. Everybody who like buys in that space, they know how to do it already. They're just converting to a different exit, which is us. The members get more affordable housing in better locations than they ever would. Mm-hmm. You know, like some of the member stories are the best. Like they found us compared to a weekly rental. So right. if I go to a microtel and it's kind of sketchy and you know, scary neighborhoods, I have to pay $80 to $100 a night. That's $700 at the end of the week. Our properties have a 5-6 bedroom in a really nice area, nice neighborhood, B neighborhood, B plus neighborhood. And they're paying $200 a week for all utilities, all furniture.
It's a no-brainer.
The, you know, the member store is the best neighborhood they've ever lived in. For $200, they're saving $500 a month, a week.
No, it's a no-brainer.
To find safe, affordable housing. It's crazy.
It's a no-brainer.
So I remember listening to your podcast early on when I met you. We're talking about, there was a woman that came on. She was talking about insurance benefits. Mm-hmm. That was the social determinants of health episode.
Right.
Right? That expanded my entire mind on that one. Is that like there are so many people that play in this space that don't know that we exist as an exit for safe, affordable housing. You know, and the fun part, oh, this is a good one for you. We're now meeting with like employers. So the business operations side. So if like for me, I ran an operations company, logistics. If a driver called out or if somebody in my warehouse called out, that was a red alarm fire day. Everybody had to work overtime. Everybody backed into it. So imagine if you're, you know, Kihi is a food distribution company that we're working with. They cannot find safe, affordable housing for the people that work in their facilities.
Right.
So it causes more churn, more operating costs, more recruiting, more training for everything else. In our world, by providing safe, affordable housing, that same employer, employee, they stay longer.
Right.
So you as the operator, you have less cost on your side. So like all these are tailwinds in our world that eventually when they all meld together, this business line, it's going to be substantial as an offering for affordable housing. That's what makes me excited.
I like it. What are you reading right now?
What did I just finish reading? I just finished reading a whole bunch of stuff on ClickFunnels. I was telling you about it. Like one of the tasks that I have right now.
You're in a funnel learning about ClickFunnels.
That's it, man. Like literally me and I've fallen asleep with Russell whispering in my ear, you know? Mm-hmm. And like all these companies that are, this is for your startup world, right? It's like we have essentially, you have to pay to play, right? Mm-hmm. For most startups, you have to pay for performance marketing. Does our box work? Yep. Mm-hmm. So let's go pay for that. And then, but there comes a tipping point where like you have to be brand aware, right? But that's a really tough line item to support and pay for. How do you find the cheapest, fastest way to increase brand awareness so that we can grow at scale without having to pay a ton of money to our friends at Google and Facebook and SEO search and everything else? That's the fun part that I'm trying to unlock now is like, how do we use social media? How do we use influencers?
On the demand or on the capital side or for
on the supply side, right? Because the people that are doing this, they're currently doing it and they only have so many choices in their vending machine.
Right.
How do I get somebody who has an audience of 1.5 million people to talk about our product? And now all of a sudden there's 1.5 million people that hey, I heard about this. Tell me more.
Right.
And then once they hear about it, it's really intriguing because they're 3/4 of the way there.
Right.
And oh, wait a minute, I just exit differently, put walls up, and now I have 7 revenue streams versus 1. You know, and like that's the fun part is that people are almost there. And then we kind of just fill in the gap about how to get more, your biggest and best out of the same asset you've been playing with for decades.
So if I'm a real estate investor or I want to be a real estate investor, how do I get involved with PadSplit? How do I do this thing?
Oh, so you can just go to our website. It's padsplit.com. Boop. It's in backwards, you know, but you can go to padsplit.com and you can look at it. We service both sides. So on the host side, you can sign up and you can get more information. We'll have their sales team contact you. And they just kind of, we walk you through that entire process. We have an entire ecosystem that we build up and down the from beginning to end, from selecting properties. We have partners that will help you, you know, renovate general contractors all the way through taking beautiful pictures so that if you looked at it like Tinder, you don't have to be this ugly picture versus this pretty picture.
Mm-hmm.
The full stack is available and you can get it through our website.
And you just depending on what kind of where you want to be on the journey, you guys can figure it out.
Yep.
Love it. Love it. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
That's a great one. Sometimes I don't follow it, but just shut up and listen. That's a great one. I've heard that one from a lot of people that I've worked with. But the other part is just be endlessly curious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be endlessly curious, because you may be like one more question away from unlocking all the things that you're so frustrated about.
Totally.
How about you?
Everything could be the last. You really can make or break your trajectory based on the quality of conversations that you're having.
Yeah. You know, this, you're a perfect example. You know, like I remember when we first met, I'm like, how do we play together?
We fell in love.
Right. And it, essentially, like, I remember coming home and I was like, I love that dude. You know, and if nothing else, you know, it is a matter of, you know, your network is amazing, but it's not because you're asking. It's just a matter that they're really cool people doing really cool things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the more curious you get about it, it's interesting how things kind of circle around and connect. But one thing I'm going to ask you is, I have this teenage kids and I talk to people like you, and I'm always asking, like, what is a piece of advice that you can give 18-year-olds?
Mm-hmm. God, like an 18-year-old today, because that's a totally different, you know, question.
Yeah.
An 18-year-old today is like, I feel that most younger people today, curiosity and like the desire and heart don't necessarily get you where you need to go. You know, I mean, I feel like, you know, like it used to be like, oh no, if you just show up and you really like, you know, like just listen and like, you know, you get points. What I'm seeing is, because everyone wants to know, like, how do you get into venture, right? Everyone, people that works for me want to get paid more. And I always tell them, if you want to get paid more, if you want the job, learn how to solve bigger problems, right? And like give output and don't wait for it. Right. Like that's how I see it. It's like people just want to be served exactly the cookie cutter way on like how to do something, when the bottom line is most managers, specifically in the capital world, you know, in big four banking, consulting, you know, we just don't have the time. Right. Like, because and the people that we don't have the time to fuck with you, you know what I mean? And the bottom line is there's like, you know, the upper quartile of people, they don't need the time, right? They don't need the time from the MD to try to explain, you know, like what they want and how they want it, because guess what? Google's available, you know, like you have to figure it out yourself and do it on your own time and not take the time of your the people that are further up on the hierarchy.
But I think you have to be curious to that too.
You have to be curious. You have to be curious, but curiosity means I'm just going to sit there and answer your questions. You know what I mean? Like I need work product.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm curious about that pain you're feeling and it's not being solved and it keeps showing up over and over and over again. That's a problem to fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't have to be perfect. That's the part that I keep coming back to, is like, I don't need a perfect solution.
Mm-hmm.
I just need a straw man to start solving the problem. We can get better, right?
Exactly.
We can iterate better and better on what that looks like. Yeah. But for God's sake, stop coming back and telling me what the problem is. I know what the problem is.
Yeah. And the thing is if I had, you know, and if I have to solve it, what do I need you for? Yes. Right. Like, like, you know, why are you here? I don't need someone to like, for me to architect how to solve this problem and like a foot soldier. I need you to go do it.
Yeah. And like, just don't be so afraid. My God, like Joe Rogan, not Joe Rogan. Who owns MMA, UFC?
I don't know.
Forget it. I can't think of his name. He said something that was amazing. I use it all the time with my kids. I'm like, just be a little bit of a savage. You're going to run over everybody around you, because everybody else is like so comfortable being sheep.
Everyone's so comfortable being sheep. Right. And
it's crazy.
But like the amount of learning that you can do on your own is infinite.
Look at me. Like I was selling bologna for 10 years, like 15 years, legitimately. I'm 2 years into real estate. I'm 2 years old into real estate. And thank God for ADD and OCD and YouTube and Google.
And right? Adderall.
That I'm unmedicated ADD. Thank God there's clicks, you know? But like amazing for me is that like this space, especially the real estate space, is so much fun. It's filled with these amazing, crazy characters. And they're all willing to share.
Yeah.
Nobody has this like Lord of the Rings Gollum-y feel where they're like, oh, it's my precious. I'm not going to tell you about it. You know, like they've all succeeded from all different backgrounds and they're willing to share if you just ask. And that's mm-hmm. the part that's amazing.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. Cool, man. Well, this was fun.
This was fun. It was a long time in coming.
You love this. I know. I fucked it up like three times, but I think I blew your mind with this interview.
This is good stuff. I just love talking with you. You're just a good time guy.
Awesome. All right, Quentin, if you like what you heard, please subscribe, tell a friend. If you want to learn more about PadSplit, go to padsplit.com and get that cash, bro. Get those short-term gains and, you know, write that shit off, right?
Everybody loves cash flow.
Everybody loves cash flow. Anyway, see you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you for tuning in to the Capital Stack Podcast. Make sure to share this with someone you know that can benefit from this content. Remember to support this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing. David Paul is the founder and general partner at DWP Capital. All opinions expressed by David and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of DWP Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. David and guests may maintain positions in the securities discussed on this podcast.